Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema with you guys here on a Monday morning that is quite miserable for the both of us because yesterday confirmed our teams suck, and I don't know that there's anything that can be done about it this season, Trevor.
Boy, do they suck, John. Boy, do they suck.
It's a sad day. Do we have the worst two defenses in the league?
Gotta be.
I think it has to be. I mean, from everything I heard about the Bears game, it sounded like receivers were just running free.
Wasn't even coverage, dude. No rush, no coverage, blown assignments, people are bad, Mike Smith's bad, rest of the coaching staff's bad. Gave up 38 points in the first half. Made Mitchell Trubisky literally look like you could enshrine him into the Pro Football Hall of Fame tomorrow and nobody would bat an eye.
That's how Joe Flacco looked, so I hear you, man. I mean, it's...
And here's the thing. I tweeted early in that game, like first quarter of that game, I tweeted that Mitchell Trubisky wasn't even having that good of a game. The Bucs were just making him look like a Pro Bowler. And Bears fan... And the thing was that after Trubisky had two touchdowns, but it was also after he had missed like three wide open people, just plain missed him, like bad throws, just like completely missed him. And I'm like, he ain't even having that good of a game. And then, of course, after the game, you know, he throws for, I don't know, what was it, six touchdowns,
I think it was six.
And then Bears fans go and find that tweet and they're like, what an idiot. It's like, all right. Come on, you gotta like understand when I tweeted that. But whatever, it doesn't matter. The Bucs defense is so bad.
Yeah,
I take all the crow I can get, I guess.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those situations where I think I don't know that it gets better under the current regime for Tampa Bay. I know it doesn't get better for Pittsburgh because I've watched for years and I know it was headed in this direction, has been apparent for some time. When you draft poorly, you develop talent poorly, and you have bad scheme. This may shock you, but everything about your unit will be bad eventually, and that's where we're at. And Steelers offense, no excuses there. They just suck. So,
and it's really hard. It's really hard for a regime to completely get over bad coaching, like even if the GM is good, because you have to marry your picks with the guys who are coaching them. Mm-hmm. So if they don't really know what they're doing, I mean, like, there's just going to come a point to where it doesn't matter. I mean, like, you know, the Buccaneers had zero impactful players, like, on their defense at all. And Vita Vea is sitting there playing nose tackle. And he was fine, actually. He made his, you know, it was his first game. Vita Vea was fine. Like, he was totally fine for what he's supposed to be. But guess what? Doesn't make an impact.
Right. And right. Derwin James does.
Right, and, like, he's a nose tackle, you know, and it's just like, man, it's just hard to swallow, and I don't think, I don't think it's going to get better under this current Bucs regime, and, man, if they don't fire these guys over at the end of the season, I don't know if you saw Dirk Cutter's quote after the game.
Yeah,
he literally
should all be fired.
He said that every person who was on that field deserves to be fired, myself included.
Right. Well, I mean, at least he's self-aware. Big agree.
Ain't wrong. No lies detected.
Right. The Steelers won't say that after the game, but I wish they would. And more than anything, I wish they just would do it. I mean, it's funny. I wonder if he's mentioning firing. I wonder if maybe Mike Smith at least is gone sometime today, tomorrow. I don't know. Probably not this time of the season, but it's bad.
Holy cow.
I mean, it's happened before. It's happened not that long ago. I mean, the Steelers should do the same thing with Keith Butler, but they won't because they held the Ravens, terrible offense that they are, to three field goals in the second half. So that'll be enough to save Butler, even though they were absolutely dreadful and completely relying upon Ravens drops and all those kind of things. But anyway, nevertheless, we're here to talk about more than just the sad state of our two favorite football teams. We are actually here to talk about our new favorite football team, the Los Angeles Rams.
No. Lifelong fans. Lifelong.
It has been a journey to get to this point, but here we are, 4-0, and it feels
here
so good.
Here we are.
All caps. Oh, we got to talk about rookies, right? Rookie performances. Let's do something to keep. I don't even want to. I could talk about Steelers. Let's just talk about Steelers and Bucks rookies. Let's get it all out of the way, and then we'll move on to the positive. Terrell Edmonds was horrendous tonight. Last night. Horrendous. Bad in every sense of the word bad. Missed tackles, blown coverages, no idea where he's supposed to be on the field. Terrible, terrible, terrible. That's the only rookie that stands out of my mind. James Washington got thrown to one time. I don't think he caught a pass. That was it. Brutal. How's it going for the Bucks over there? Colin Davis? MJ Stewart?
So, I mean, Davis is kind of fine. He's this starting outside corner now, right, like full-time. And since Hargraves is hurt, MJ is the starting nickel. And here's the thing. I mean, you like that MJ is physical and that he's aggressive and that he'll come up and hit you. He'll force some fumbles. He'll rough you up a little bit at the beginning of your routes. You like all that. You don't like the fact that he was a 25th percentile athlete for the position at the combine, and it got exploited basically in every way possible over the last 3 weeks. Hmm. So that's just not a good sign moving forward. I like him, though. Like I like him as a player, but again, you know, if you're not an athlete enough to play in the league.
Right. That was my big concern with him. Yeah.
There's not a lot that can mask that. Mm-hmm. You're just – it sucks. And it sucks, too, because I think that he's – I think he's smart. And, again, you know, I like his aggressiveness for the position, but whatever. Vita Vea got his first start, and he was fine. He's nose tackle.
Mm-hmm.
that's the thing. He's just
– least you traded tackle. Back for him, man.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say.
And then Ronald Jones is about as timid as a running back could possibly be.
I am just, man, he was so good in college. It's
he
just
is scared.
Frustrating.
He is,
man.
So scared. He's scared.
I hate that, because how can I see that part of the evaluation? Like, you know, like as an evaluator who wants to get every pick right, you know, I mean, obviously you're never going to, but it just, and we'll see. I mean, it's a long way to go. Maybe he suddenly finds confidence. I think it's kind of unlikely. I don't want to, you know, totally bury him or anything, but it's just frustrating. Like, you know, it just, you really wish you could see that part of things as an evaluator, you know, how quickly they're going to pick things up and the confidence and, you know, whether they are suddenly going to become timid, because he didn't run timid in college, right? Like, you never would have said that.
Well, certainly his junior year, he didn't. Yeah. Freshman and sophomore year, he had a little bit of timidness to him.
Oh, did he? Okay.
And we've kind of heard from people who have kind of followed him since his high school days and going to USC that maybe this is a little bit par for the course for him.
So maybe he warms up.
Which is both good and bad, right? Because the good is, hey, he's warmed up before, he can do it again. The bad is, oh God, what if this dude never snaps out of it because it's the highest level competition and he doesn't actually get manufactured touches and playing, starting the year against cupcakes
and
all
running
stuff.
Back is a youth best served position and
correct.
Get it
so
early, it usually doesn't happen. So
not great, John.
Two running backs that did get it, Trevor. Two running backs that very much got it. Two Georgia running backs that we feuded over in both. We like both of us like both of them. Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. Both went off. Nick Chubb had like 3 carries for like 140 yards or something crazy. I mean, it was
Saquon. Here it is. Saquon could never.
I'm sorry. 3 carries for 105 yards. He averaged just a cool 35 yards per carry. 2 touchdowns. He broke 2 long ones, and then I think he had 1 carry for 1 yard. So very
Saquon Barkley could never.
Yeah, Barkley could never because he was running for his life behind the Giants offensive line. I watched some of that game and it was something else. He had like 10 carries for 40 some yards or something. It's just I don't know if it's going to come together for him in that way. He made some plays as a receiver. Sony Michel also 25 carries, 112 yards and a touchdown. Dolphins tried to load up to stop the run late and his yard per carry went down, I think, a little bit in the second half, but man, he was running wild in the first half. Looked great. Chubb looked great. Running through arm tackles at the second level. Both those guys, and the blocking was finally there, and they took advantage of it. You got to have all aspects as a running back. I hate when people say, no, so-and-so was a waste of a pick because when there's clearly no blocking for them. I'm like, what are they supposed to do? Like, not every guy's Barry Sanders, you know? It just, it's been, that part's frustrating.
Only one,
for
in fact.
Running back.
Only
yeah.
one, Barry Sanders.
Only one, and only one ever. Rashad Penny even got nine. He even broke a little run at one point in the game, although he is the RB3 right now in Seattle. So when you spend a first-round pick on your RB3 and you don't really have a great RB1, not really a great sign.
Please tell me. Please tell me you saw Earl Thomas flick off the Steelers or the Seahawks.
I definitely saw it. I didn't see it live, but
nothing but respect for my safety.
I wish he was my safety, because my safety was Terrell Edmonds getting lit up like a Christmas tree. But yeah, that was really not bizarre because it's Earl and he's always responded emotionally. But also, like, I was like, man, that's your teammates and your coaches. They don't sign you to a long term contract. So, I mean, I get the figure of what he's trying to do, you know, like what he's trying to say. But, you know, in a game that was tight like that, not exactly lifting his teammates up at that point. But it was also odd because, like, Earl had the choice to, like, play or not. He should have not played, I think. Like, you know what
did
I mean?
Did he,
like,
still not practice?
No, I think he did practice this week.
Oh, okay.
He said if he was feeling like he had a headache, or I didn't remember hearing anything about it, but just been kind of the whole thing has just been totally bizarre to me. Because
Earl loves football, though.
Yeah, he, like, does. And
he wants to play.
Yeah, it's such a strange situation. You know, he will say things in locker room after the game like, yeah, I'm just not going to practice if I don't want to practice. And I'm like, man, you can't really, like, although I get it, as a coach, you, like, can't just let players say that. But, like, Pete Carroll's, like, lay down Larry, so, like, of course he's going to let it go. So, like, nobody says anything. It's this, like, weird thing hanging over there. But then if you watch him in games, he's, like, 1,000% engaged. So I'm like, is it really just that he loves football that much that he, like, I know it's the paychecks, too, to some degree, but it's just odd to me, like, you know. I mean, I think they should have given him a long-term deal. But I certainly understand why they didn't. I mean, he came off an injury, and he's 29 years old, and safeties haven't really aged well across the league, so... I understand why they don't want to from Seattle's standpoint. I think they also have the right to not sign him, for sure. I think they have that right. I don't think it's fair to say they are completely the bad guys because of that. Do you?
No, I mean, Seattle, like, NFL teams are in the business of making money, right? I mean, like, it's not like... Right. It's not like isn't a calculated risk by them, but the risk here is they're pissing off the player. And I mean, they're kind of being dickish to a guy that meant a lot to them. And, you know, the Legion of Boom was one of, if not the most vital parts of the Seahawks football history, basically, at this point, that entire era where they ran the league and they were the most feared
right.
defense,
but it's gone now,
was.
Right?
And
like,
so,
it feels
no,
like
and,
maybe
and,
they're
and
like,
I'm totally against paying guys for what they've done, but I'm just saying that goes into it for Earl, at least from an emotional standpoint.
Sure.
You don't even have to put it as a monetary standpoint, but right. I'm just saying, like, from an emotional standpoint, that definitely goes into it.
I guess I don't like, and I am typically very pro player, and as you know, and I think that in this situation, like, I think Earl should be paid. Like, I would pay him, but I don't think it's not like a Khalil Mack situation. Let's put it that way. This isn't like Khalil Mack at 27 years old or whatever, who is clearly in his prime, has never missed a game, been productive every single season, you know, never been a volatile type of personality. And I love Earl's personality. I really do. But, like, he goes to the other team's locker room and he has to be traded for, you know what I mean? Like, and everybody's gone that was there. And this is a rebuilding team and you're in a totally different place, you know, as a team and as an organization, and you're trying to figure out where you should invest money long-term when you're obviously going to have to be redrafting and building everything back up on your defense. And, like, I don't like the idea that Seattle is as many dumb things as they've done. And I've been pretty critical of them and the way they've drafted and lots of other stuff. I just don't like the idea that they're, like, the bad guy in this situation because they, like, decided they didn't want to pay Earl and that he has to honor his contract. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they're, like, 100% the bad guy, but I'm sure that Earl basically all but demanded a trade once everyone in the Legion of Boom was already out. And Seattle obviously didn't do that. They didn't really cater to
that. Well, they want a second for him. I think that's pretty fair, right? It's not like they're asking for some first that's unrealistic.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And so I think that Seattle somewhat held him captive, not trading him. And when his heart clearly left after all the Legion of Boom guys left, and then also they were sitting here and not giving him a contract extension. So where I don't think that they were the quote unquote bad guys, they weren't really, they were still taking advantage of him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. From my perspective, it's like, I think Seattle believes they can get somebody to bite on a second round pick for Earl Thomas, and they don't want to budge off that, which, like, I get, because you should be able to get a second round pick for Earl Thomas, you know, and there are plenty of teams with the space to sign him. And the fact, and the obviously talent wise, he's worth a second round pick. The fact that it hasn't happened says they're not the only team that's a little bit, whether it's for what Thomas is asking, or given the other concerns with Thomas that we just talked about, that not everybody else is biting out there to give up a second and to be and pay for him. So I think from Seattle's perspective, yeah, if they were asking for a first, I would be like, okay, well, maybe you need to back off your price so you can get this guy out of here. But a second is pretty fair. Like, if you're them, I'd want a second back. Like, I mean, maybe eventually they go to a third, but I wouldn't go down to a third by week four. Guys are going to get hurt. Teams are going to get desperate. Look at Philly losing Rodney McLeod for the year. He's their single high free safety. They'd love to have Earl Thomas on that team, I'm sure. He's a perfect player for what they want to do. So maybe a team gets desperate that's in a window to win, and they offer a second, and then you get your compensation that you wanted. So it's kind of, you know, I think it's a catch-22. You have to look at it from
that's
both
fair.
Sides. I just think both sides are fair in this. I get Earl's frustration, but I think it's easy for everybody to kind of lash out at Seattle. I'm like, I don't know. I don't feel like they're being horrible to him. Like, I mean, I would pay him.
No, I don't think that, I don't necessarily think they're being horrible or quote-unquote the bad guys to him. But I think that they are taking advantage of him a little bit, because they know he doesn't want to be there, and they're not giving him either of his wishes, whether that's backing off on a trade value and allowing him to go to a different team or signing him to a contract that he wants. Like,
right.
Because the negotiations of that contract have been going on for a long, long time, and clearly they're not budging on that either. And so I don't think they're the bad guy, but I would still say Seattle was taking advantage of him a little bit.
Right. We got to talk about rookie performances from quarterbacks as we steer back toward the first year.
Josh Allen's butt, Sam Darnold's butt, Josh Rosen's the goat, Baker Mayfield's the other goat. All right, there you go. Wrap up the pod.
You know, that's an assessment of their performances that's going to draw the ire of a lot of fans. But show me the lie. No, if you look at the stat lines from these guys, you will be disappointed. It was not a pretty week by any stretch of the imagination for any of these four quarterbacks in the box score. But, I mean, I saw a lot of Baker Mayfield's game, and I thought he was very good still. And Antonio Callaway, I'm sorry for the disrespect, but he dude has no idea what he's doing. And he dropped like five passes, and on one of Baker's picks, it's a vertical route, and Callaway ran a great route. He doesn't look for the ball, and Baker's like one. I mean, it's going to be a competitive catch, but like he doesn't even look for the ball or anything, and it's picked off. I'm like, dude is just lost on the field. So
picked
like,
off by who, John? Picked off by who?
Reggie Nelson.
Oh, where did he go to school?
Gator great. It was Gator on Gator crime.
There it is.
Who, by the way, Reggie Nelson is for sure cooked, but that pick will be enough for the Raiders to start him the rest of the season. So,
not only start him, but sign him.
Probably. Is he 40 yet? Sign him. But Baker, I thought, was good for the most part. Now, with the things he needed to work on for sure. I mean, the first pick also was off a guy's hands and intercepted. So I'm not too down on the two picks part of his stat line. There's some things in the pocket he needs to manage. That internal clock has to tick a little faster, but I thought he was good for the most part. I've only seen bits and pieces of Josh Rosen's performance, some really impressive throws, like high degree of difficulty stuff. I haven't seen any his bad throws yet, so I don't want to like be over the top in favor of Rosen. He was 15 of 27 for 180 yards and a touchdown. I know there were four or five drops in there. I saw Larry Fitzgerald drop one in the middle of the field. J.J.
Wow.
Nelson dropped a for sure touchdown. And here's a move that will get you riled up here, Trevor, as we record on a Sunday night. this is what happened. I know you haven't followed a lot of the other games because you were covering the Bucks, but have you heard about what happened at the end of the Arizona-Seattle game?
I'm dead inside after watching that Bucks game, so I don't really think I can get riled up, but my answer is no to your question.
Rosen drives him down with like a minute and a half left in position for a game-winning field goal. 17-17 game, right? He drives him down. They get in position for a 45-yard field goal, right? They decide to run it three times. Take the ball out of his hand. Just try and straight up run it. Even on like third and seven or something, they know they're not going to get it. Take the ball out of Rosen's hands. They miss the 45-yard field goal. Seattle takes it. Couple plays. They go down. They kick the game-winning field goal. Cardinals season's over. Coach and scared. It was all over the league.
Man, I don't get it.
Nuts. I don't either.
Man, I don't get it.
You're 0-3. You have literally nothing to lose.
How are these guys coaching in the league, John?
I ask myself like, that every single week.
And, like, look, man, you and I can't put on the headset today and, like, know what we're doing. Like, I'm not out here, like, saying that.
Yeah.
But there have got to be qualified people who can do this better.
The fact you that know? You always say it, it's a good old boys league, and that has held the league back so much.
It is a boys club.
Look what happened when these young guys get shots. Club. You know? I'm not saying every young guy's going to be a good coach, but I'm just saying you got to start branching out. The old school way of doing things is not getting it done, man. It's just
nope.
Not. It's a totally new league. And if you're not throwing the ball heavy and you don't have a ton of creative concepts to throw the ball from and alignments and mismatch personnel, you're just wasting your time. It's not going to work in today's NFL. It's just not. You're not going to win that way. So anyway, I thought really good things from everything I've seen in Rosen's performance. I have to check out the tape, obviously, and really watch that. I've seen a good number of throws now from the Josh Allen game against Green Bay. This one was ugly, man. He was like...
They didn't score, did they?
They did not score. They got shut out. He was horrendous in the first half. I think he had like 50 yards passing and was like 9 of 25 or something like that. He finished the game 16 of 33, 151 yards, two picks. The pick he threw to end the first half, what have you seen it?
No.
It was like the most peak Josh Allen play ever, dude. It's like third and down from the red zone, and they're down like 16-0, I think, at that point. And he was under pressure, rolled out to the right, threw back across his body to the middle of the field, like 50 yards in the air, teardrop, down right in, Jair Alexander caught it like a punt return. It was the worst decision I think I've ever seen.
I did watch Jair Alexander shove Josh Allen to the ground. Did you see that?
I didn't see that, no.
Oh, you didn't? It was no. Like I think it was after a play. It had to have been like after a play. And it was I think the play like went out of bounds or was close to the sideline, and Josh Allen was walking back to the huddle and Jair Alexander was like right next to him, and I think Josh Allen was like talking smack to Jair, and he Josh Allen kind of like with one arm like shoves him a little bit, and then Jair just full on bends the
chucks
knees
him.
Just leverages him and puts him on the ground after the play.
Imagine chirping at the chirp king, Jair Alexander.
Yeah, I would never.
Our boy Connor Rogers told us Sam Darnold's performance was pretty ugly. 17 of 34, 167 yards. Jaguars defense, obviously a good one. I personally think Jeremy Bates is outmatched based on what I've seen in the Jets this season. I don't think he's ready for a lot of the things that he needs to do to be successful in the NFL. But nevertheless, I don't think Darnold's been great either, especially down the field. So long way to go for all these rookie quarterbacks. I'm really excited to get to the tape on Josh Rosen and see all of his performance, because I thought he would be the most pro-ready guy. He and Baker kind of basically the same in terms of their pro-readiness. And from everything I've heard, it sounds like those two guys were the most impressive, but still seems like there's, of course, lots of things that need cleaned up. So more than anything, just it's fun. All four of them are playing. You know, we get to evaluate them every week. That didn't take long either, right? All four of them playing by week five.
I remember writing that article of how many games I think that these guys are going to play, and it was a lot less than this.
Yeah. Note to self for the future, pretty much always pick an early week for them to play, because it's just doesn't last long anymore, man. The Alex Smith, Pat Mahomes situations are pretty rare, so These rookies out here playing early, learning on the fly, and we're going to be able to evaluate their growth all season long. So it's going to be fun. There were other performances that stood out as well that we'll talk about again later in the week, but that's all the time we've got for this episode. We have to talk about college football prospects and NFL draft prospects that played this past weekend. I will talk about those tomorrow.
It's going to get heated talking about Penn State, Ohio State tomorrow, my friend.
Yes.
It's going to get heated.
Yes. I won't even start. Yes. It's going to get, that'll be an episode people will not want to miss, Tuesday's episode. Wednesday, we'll talk more college. We'll talk a little bit of both probably on Wednesday. Thursday, we got games to talk about, give our predictions for. We got Fan Friday, or we got Super Show Friday coming up as well with the draft dude. So lots of good stuff coming up on the pod this week. As always, thank you guys so much for listening. Keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.